This is Gorgeous Lives, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. Today we welcome on Jessica Bennett from the Feminist Fight Club, talking to her greatest UK fan, Radio Gorgeous's Amanda Rui.
I first came across you when you were in the UK. You had an interview on Women's Hour. And it was amazing because you were talking about, I mean, what Jane Garvey picked up on was about self-confidence. And because I'm all about, you know, self-promotion, self-confidence, you said something really powerful. I thought, oh my God, this girl speaks my language. I've got to speak to you. You said, stop lacking self-confidence and go ahead and get a boast bitch. So can you tell me a bit more about your boast bitching?
Yes. So a boast bitch. Basically, this is a person who boasts on your behalf. And the reason why women need a boast bitch, if that language offends you, you can call it something else, is because when women brag, we're perceived as disliked and cocky and self-promotional. Whereas when men brag, it's simply seen as, you know, a masculine trait. This is what men do. Of course they're bragging. It's part of having a job. And of course, in the modern workplace, one needs to, in fact, self-promote in order to get ahead. How is somebody going to know all of the amazing things you're accomplishing if you aren't actually promoting it or talking about it? And so one sort of trick to overcoming that gender bias is to have someone else brag on your behalf. And it can be so simple. You know, sometimes this is an unspoken agreement that happens already. Sometimes you literally, and I have done this, taken a friend aside and said, hey, okay, you're going to be my boast bitch and I'm going to be yours. And so like, this is what this means. Let's begin. And that person just makes sure that anyone in your office or your workplace or whatever the circumstance might be knows when you've done something amazing. And as a result, you get credit for it. And that person, in fact, looks like a very selfless colleague and a team player. So everybody wins.
Brilliant. It's a win-win-win. And I think also you said that men can also be boast biatches as well. Is that right?
Exactly. Men can completely be boast bitches, and people, you know, men talk a lot and people seem to listen to them. So in fact, maybe having a male boast bitch is not such a bad idea.
It's a nice way to call a man a bitch anyway. Excusez-moi. I do like the language in your book. It's very fruity, let's say. So yeah, your book, The Feminist Fight Club, it is the book of the year. I mean, seriously, you wrote it at such a good time. It's unbelievable. I mean, everybody needs to have this book. And I don't know whether I told you this when I was actually, you know, trying to get you to interview, basically. I had to read it to my daughter one night for a bedtime reading. And she is only 9 years old. And she said, Mummy, I haven't got my bedtime storybook from school. I forgot to bring it. And she goes, Mum, but can I read your Feminist Fight Club? Or can you read it out to me? And I said, okay, yeah. And so she actually loved it. And then she's actually citing things from your book. And I promise you one thing. I think your book really needs to go like on the national agenda, national curriculum, because, you know, you're helping so many people out. It's unbelievable.
I hope so. Yeah, maybe there is a Feminist Fight Club for teens or kids with a little less vulgar language.
Well, yes, I did have to kind of, you know.
But truly, you know, all of these things that we experience, that I talk about in the book, some of these daily gender biases, they're happening in school too. So in fact, you know, young girls are experiencing them, students in college are experiencing them. They may happen in a different circumstance, but the actual actions are the same.
Yeah, exactly. And actually what I said also, I think this really should be the case, that every mother whose daughter is about to leave school, you know, and go to university, and then, you know, because you said in your book, you mentioned A for a lay. Is that really true?
This was a group that in the 1960s, where this was a phrase that was said frequently on college campuses, where at the time it was pretty common for male professors to just outright proposition their students. And so they deemed it A for a lay. That was sort of the slang going around campus. So I hope that that is not the case. That was a story that happened in the past. But certainly I think there's a lot of inequity that still exists on campuses and people need to be aware of.
Yeah, I think it's unbelievable. And I think that, you know, even interns going into workplaces, they, again, need to read your book because they're going to understand actually what is really behind it. So how long did it take you to write your book? And lots, you know, there's masses of research, loads of facts and figures. When you said, I'm going to write this book, what date was that? As in what year? And then I know it got published last year.
It took me about a year.
Basically. A year, right, okay.
But in reality, I've been living this for the entirety of my career. So I've been a working journalist for about 10 years now. And I remember early on in my career, constantly thinking just to myself, as I sort of butted up against these issues that I didn't even initially acknowledge were sexist. I just thought they were barriers to me rising up. I kept saying to myself, I wish there was some sort of like manual that I could read, or I wish I had been taught
manual,
this.
Manual, did you hear that? Manual.
A woman manual.
Yeah.
I wish I had been taught this in school. Like, how do I go in and negotiate a raise? Like, I had no idea. And there are various books on this subject, but nothing that you can sort of flip to, find the page that applies to you, and actually follow the advice. So a lot of this stuff are tips that I've been keeping in random notepads and drafts in my email and different files all over for a number of years. And so finally it got to the point where I wanted to actually compile it, and I wanted to compile it in a way that I hoped was delivered in a manner that was fun to read. You know, it's weird to think about sexism as being fun, but like, we have to be able to laugh about this stuff so that we don't lose our minds.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And I just love all of your language. Like, I've got a new one for you. Maybe you don't know this one. You know, it's not too early for my daughter to get not indoctrinated, but sorry, mandoctrinated. You know what I mean? So let's get it. You know, you've got so many amazing words, and it's my feminifesto or whatever, and badger firm and everything. So tell me about, what are your kind of your most favorite words that you've invented for the book?
You know, I mean, the words, things like manterrupter, bro-propriator, which is a guy that appropriates your idea. All of these are kind of silly. And, you know, I was literally like typing into pun databases on my computer trying to find good puns for this stuff. And it's meant to be silly. It's meant to roll off the tongue. But each of these words is actually rooted in real research. You know, women are in fact more likely to be interrupted when they speak than men are, twice as likely. And women's ideas are often incorrectly attributed to men. And so the idea of a bro-propriator is actually real. So there's some truth to all of these things, but I wanted to deliver them in a playful manner. So what's my favorite word? I like bro-appropriation a lot, and it has come in very useful. Mansplaining, of course, which I did not come up with, is sort of the original of these terms, and put a name to a behavior that I think had existed, you know, literally since the dawn of time, like men have been explaining things to women. But suddenly, only in the past couple of years, we've had this word that rolls off the tongue. It's kind of fun to say, mansplaining. And now suddenly you can call people out for doing it, and everybody knows what you mean. So it actually has a great utility as well as being.
So do you think some of your words, I'm not joking, I could actually be added, you know, because in the English Oxford Dictionary, we do have new words like, you know, I don't know, 20 or so-and-so per annum added. Do you reckon that your manterrupter or your bro-appropriation might be added? Is that your goal?
Maybe. It could. I know that mansplaining was nominated for Word of the Year a couple of years ago.
That was from you?
Dialect Society. That one was not from me, but a lot of them were inspired by that. So certainly, there, you know, there's a term, in fact, for these type of words, which is bromanteau. So portmanteau is a linguistic term that means when you take two words and you combine them. I hadn't known that. And so the linguists have given sort of a funny spin to that, bromanteau, which is when basically you broify one of these words and combine it into a new word. That is, in fact, a category that has been discussed at these various linguistic conferences that I happen to know about and attend because I write a column about internet language. So I've been to some of these discussions.
I love it. And I tell you one thing, one of my favorite ones really is the man interrupting. Now, you know, your lovely president, DT, he was on, I call it doing a Donald Trump. I don't actually call it manterrupting. I call people out and say, stop being a Donald Trump here. Do you know how many times he interrupted Hillary on that interview when he was like stalking her around? That was so gross. I mean, that was like an overt, example of that, wasn't it?
Right, completely. And it was so fascinating because when that happened, I think that was the second debate. So people started tallying and he interrupted Hillary something like 43 times and he interrupted the moderator 7 times. And then Hillary interrupted like once. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how can you get a word in? Like, this is a debate, yes, but it's also a civil debate. And I think that a lot of women watching that recognize this in their own lives. You know, this is the kind of stuff that we deal with on a daily basis. And it's easy to kind of brush off, it's easy to ignore, it's easy to say it's not that big a deal. But actually it is. If you can't get a complete thought out, or you're constantly having to rush through what you're saying because you're afraid you're going to be interrupted at all times, it really does affect the way that we present ideas in a working environment. And so he certainly, I think, has taken the crown away from Kanye West, who was, prior to him, the most famous manterrupter when he jumped on the stage when Taylor Swift was receiving her award and yanked the microphone from her. Donald Trump has now taken the crown for biggest world manterrupter.
Yes, and, you know, other things as well. Which, you know, you are a political lady, so do you want to have any commentary on what's going on at the moment or not?
I mean, it's my mouth is almost still to the floor. It's been unbelievable, the amount of stuff simply that has happened since he took office has been nuts. And as a journalist trying to figure out, how do we cover this? You know, like, for so long, there have been a lot of euphemisms used around things like lies. We call them falsehoods. We say that they're not true, but it's only actually been, and I've been tracking this in recent days, I think the last week or so, that publications like the New York Times and the Washington Post have come out and said in a headline, Donald Trump is lying. And I think that that's so important because these are these subtle semantics that actually inform the public. And so I'm sort of at a place where I completely disagree with everything he's done so far. Yeah. I want to remain objective as a journalist, but I actually think that it is part of our role to speak out about some of this stuff and to say it like it is. These are lies. You know, they're not alternative facts. They're not just falsehoods. The definition of a lie is intentionally misleading, and a lot of this is intentionally misleading.
Yeah, and what about that Spence guy, the press secretary? I mean, what kind of a job is he? I mean, selling himself to the devil, or, you know, or does he really believe everything? I mean, you know, you've got these people who are working there. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, there is a huge war being started against the media, and we're going to have to figure out how to react to it and how to continue to cover this in a way that is fair and doing a service to the American people. But I've never heard anyone talk like that before. And, you know, to look at his Twitter feed, this is a sitting president, and he's talking about members of Congress as having fake tears and using the language of a 13-year-old boy on the playground. And, you know, it's flabbergasting. It's the thing that is keeping me going is knowing that there are thousands of people out there protesting and around the world as well, coming out in support, defying this Muslim ban, gathering together, galvanizing. And, you know, when we found out that this happened, it was something like 8 o'clock p.m. and people were rushing to JFK, the airport in New York City.
Amazing.
And by the hundreds of thousands. And certainly for me, that's not something I've seen in my lifetime. Like, the level of protest and activism among regular people who don't consider themselves activists has taken on a new level that I don't think has existed since maybe my parents' generation.
Yeah, I mean, I was speaking to somebody the other day who does meditation, and she said something very interesting. She goes, well, I was meditating, I was channeling the universe or whatever, but I was really thankful in a very strange way for Donald Trump. This is going to sound a bit weird, because he's actually bringing, you know, the feminist movement, it is out and proud. I mean, how many million of those pussycats were knitted? Do you know the word pussy now is common parlance? I'm so pleased with it. I mentioned it the other day in front of my kids, they're 9 and 11, in front of my husband. He says, you can't use that word. I said, you just wait a minute, it's common parlance. The news readers are talking about pussy now. Do you know what I mean? And I think he's doing the opposite of what he wants to do. I think it's bloody amazing what all of us females and supportive males are doing, don't you think?
Yeah, that's a very interesting perspective. And I spoke to an activist recently, a feminist activist who's written a bunch of books, and she was very active in the 1960s. And she said the same thing. She was like, I thank him for what he's done towards bringing people together and galvanizing the feminist because it's there. And it's more intersectional than it has been. Like, this is not just about gender. This is about race and xenophobia. homophobia, and it really extends across the board. So yes, if nothing else, we are banding together to resist.
Yeah, which is, leads on to my next question, really, because you, in your book, you say that the Feminist Fight Club was actually an underground movement. You used to meet, you know, two or three friends in your coffee bars and all the rest of it, having a milkshake, slurping away. It rather reminded me of the Emmeline Pankhurst. You know, she's one of your heroes. So first of all, why do you think women's movements initially need to be underground? Or rather, why did you choose to your for your one to kind of be quite hush-hush?
I mean, I don't think that they do need to be, and I think it's better for them to be out in the open. At the time that my group formed, and, you know, we didn't consider it a movement. It was just about 10 of us meeting in a friend's apartment. And we were all very frustrated in our jobs. We worked in creative fields. We were journalists and producers and filmmakers, but we were all starting out. And so we were relatively low level in assistant roles frequently. Many of us had multiple jobs. I was working at Newsweek magazine at the time in a part-time but actually full-time role, no health insurance. And so I was like moonlighting at a bar on nights. And we were all really frustrated. We weren't rising up. There were white men everywhere. There were no mentors. There were no female leaders.
And so
we, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. Once you start seeing
it. Bloody hell, I'm getting addicted now. Sorry, carry on. Yeah. I'm interrupting.
So we started meeting just to talk about these issues. And at the time, the reason why it was secret was because there were a number of women in the group who worked at major television companies who really did worry that if it got out that they were meeting in a feminist group, they would be penalized or at least stigmatized. And they didn't want that to happen. And so we didn't talk about the group outside of the group, but we continued to meet monthly. And over time, you know, culture and society has changed, our workplaces have changed, and we've gotten much more comfortable with it. And so what used to be the rule of you don't talk about the club outside of the club, which is where the joke that we are a feminist fight club came from, has now become you must talk about the feminist fight club. We can't cower in corners and talk about this behind closed doors. We need to talk about this openly and loudly because it needs to become something larger.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And now, as we've just mentioned beforehand, it is becoming larger and it's becoming big and huge. And, you know, we can all thank you for that and everybody else. You know, and you're helping all of us a lot really understand the issues and the problems with other people. Because, I mean, I don't work in corporate. I work, you know, I'm a solopreneur. So I don't kind of, you know, come up against that. And I was actually going to ask you, in your book, you mention by 2018, the wives will be out earning the men. Is this in corporate or where did you, what's that figure from?
That's in American families.
Yes.
And so they'll be out earning their husbands in sort of traditional families, which is a huge, huge shift. And so, you know, we talk about women needing to take on leadership roles at work and have equal earnings to men, but also men need to take on equal roles at home. And so a lot of this is about, you know, we won't be equal unless we're both doing both things. And so when we talk about things like parental leave, which in this country, you know, there's no federal policy, there's no paid parental leave. And it's a huge issue for many families and companies are left trying to sometimes implement good policies, most often not implementing anything. But until we can make this an issue that is not just about women, like this is a human rights issue, it's an issue that affects men and families and parents of all kinds, then I think we're going to go further because, you know, it's easy to ghettoize something that is a woman's issue. It's just about women, but this is really about everyone.
Yes, and also the kids are being affected as well and they need to learn from a very, you know, young age, don't they? Yeah. So, you know, going to your cocktail list in your book, I love that cocktail list. My favourite one is the Long Island iced teas. I love it. So, yeah, tell me about that one then and your cocktail list.
I'm trying to remember what the Long Island iced teas is. I think it's go to a bar, order a Long Island iced tea, get a picture of it, and ask a woman if she wants it.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Let somebody buy you a Long Island iced tea and don't go home with them.
Yes, and that's the punchline. Don't go home with them.
Yeah.
You know, feminists can still be funny. We can still make jokes. We're not humorless. And so at the very end of the book, I provide a guide on how to start your own fight club. And, you know, literally you can start a fight club any way you want. The only rule is you're fighting patriarchy, not each other. We're not physically fighting.
Yeah.
But so I provide some different activities that one can do, some different activist moves, and then, you know, cocktails. Maybe you want to have a cocktail at your meeting, and you might as well make it. Cocktail.
And I'm a great fan of beer. That's my drink of choice. Is it really invented by ladies?
By women, yes.
Woo! Where is it?
And that been called, you know, everyone thinks it's a male drink. It's not a male drink.
Yeah. I mean, I've been called, you know, I don't have a pint now. I mean, I do love a pint. I kind of order them by halves because I think it's just too huge. But, you know, you can be called a bit butch if you're drinking from a pint. It's like, excuse me, all the women in Venezuela, they all drink pints of beer. I think, yes.
I love that. Yes. Yeah. So, moral of the story, drink more pints.
I think, okay, I'm going to get back to my pint days now. I thought, you know, because I'm a 47-year-old middle-aged woman. No, I'm not. I'm a woman, very happy, you know, very happy with my two children. I'm going to go back to my pints. You talk about your power pose, okay, which we've all heard. What was that TED talk? There was a woman who talked on somebody.
Yeah, Amy Cuddy. She's a researcher at Harvard, and she invented this concept of the power pose, which basically is that if you stand in a powerful position, so like hands on hips, you can put your hands up. I'm sitting right now. You need to be standing with your legs sort of spread apart in a powerful stance. And actually, if you stay that way for 90 seconds, your testosterone levels will go up and your stress hormones will go down and you will, in fact, become more confident. So wow. It's an amazing little trick or hack before you're, I don't know, walking on stage, giving a presentation, going to something you're nervous about, going on a first date, like whatever it may be, go in the bathroom, lock yourself in there, power pose for 90 seconds.
And do you do that yourself?
I do it before speeches, typically. Wow. I once did it before a terrible breakup that I knew was coming. And, you know, it's very versatile. It can be employed in all sorts of situations.
Brilliant. And do you ever find yourself slinking down and going to that kind of the weak female?
Yeah, like what I'm doing right now. You know, I think that a lot of us do that. And I remember in school always kind of like crossing my body, like pretzeling my body up when I was sitting in a desk.
Yeah.
I work from home, so it's I'm pretzeled up in different positions on my couch. But yeah, I think that that's pretty common. Women tend to do that. You don't ever see men doing that. And so researchers have looked at like, why is this? And they don't really know. Is it because we're like protecting our body parts? Are we just taught to take up less space? I think that's certainly true. And so over time, this is what we develop. But these are what are known as low power poses. And they're not going to make you confident. And they're not going to exude confidence. And the reality is, you know, whatever your workplace, if you are exuding confidence, you're likely to get ahead, or you're likely to come off as being competent as well. Mm-hmm. And so something as simple as like not scrunching up your body can actually be pretty effective.
Brilliant. I think that's such a great tip. I've got two more questions for you. Your video, the Fight Club video, it made me cry with anger and amazement. And oh my God, it was just so amazing. So tell me about how you made it, or, you know, where did that come from?
Yeah, so the video, we basically wanted to make Mortal Kombat, but as a feminist fight club. So we used all of the graphics and the sounds and the fonts of the original Mortal Kombat. And I wanted to kind of feminize what is traditionally thought of as this very masculine video game. And so it's set up like a video game, but instead of these normal enemies that you have, the enemies are things like the Manterruptor, the guy who, anytime you express any emotion, is like, are you on your period? Is it that time of the month?
Yeah.
The stenographer, which is the guy who is leading a meeting and then asks inevitably the only woman in the room to take the notes or grab the coffee. And then the womanemy, who is the woman who views other women as the competition. And so we go through each of these scenarios and then we try to provide battle tactics for how to overcome them. So the video is meant to, you know, highlight very real issues, but also make you laugh in the process.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's a must watch. I've put it onto my Facebook feed, you know, quite a few times now. And also you mentioned a few, you know, rock stars or whatever you call them. You mentioned Beyonce and Missy Elliott. My favorite is the get your freak on for Missy Elliott. I love that. It's so like, so what, who's your fave? Is it Bey or Missy Elliott or none of the above?
I mean, I would go with Missy just because, like, I'm a child of the 90s, like 90s rap. But I have a lot of favorites. There's a whole playlist at the end of the book full of Girl Power Feminist Fight Club music, and both Beyonce and Missy are on it, plus many others. So have your
brilliant. Okay, well, I'm going to go for Missy Elliott and do that hoik duk thing. So it's been amazing interviewing you, Jessica Bennett, for Radio Gorgeous. Here's my cup to say thank you very much. Cheers. And a sip of English tea from the Radio Gorgeous mug. And thank you so much. And good luck with all the protesting. Keep it up. And I really do think Penguin, yes, they need to be selling many more in the UK. So if you want me to help with the old PR, I tell you, I've got so many friends buying this now because I just keep banging on about it. So
good.
When are you coming back over to the UK? When's that?
I don't know. I don't know immediate plans, but I would love to come back.
Come, please, I beg you. Come on over.
Or maybe I'll just leave America and escape.
Maybe that might be, no, you got to keep there. You got to keep those banners going and those pussy hats, okay? No, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much, then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm a lovemaker. I'm a
This is a Radio Gorgeous production for Radio Gorgeous 2017. For more information, go to radiogorgeous.com.